IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. We hope all of you are having a good productive day, whatever that means for each of you. In common parlance, we call ourselves vastly productive when we accomplish many things within a short period of time. But what does productivity mean at a macro level? What does it mean for the economy? Specifically, what implications does labor productivity have? What are some of the trends over the years, across sectors, across countries? To discuss all of this, I have with me my colleague Sarthak and Anupam. They both will discuss broadly productivity and why it is important, and also what can we do to make India more labor productive. Firstly, we'll start off with what is productivity in general. I mean, for us as in common parlance, productivity is commonly defined as the ratio between output volume and the volume of inputs. Okay, it measures how efficiently production inputs such as labor and capital are being used in an economy to produce a given level of output, right? So taking it from there, what do you think constitutes for productivity, and how do we look at this from a macro perspective?
So yeah, Suman, so it's fantastic. I think problem or the way to think about productivity is, you know, there is an official macroeconomics version, and that goes into a lot of mathematical jargon and so on. And on the other hand, I think people also use it extremely loosely, as you mentioned, you know, that somebody did something, a little bit of work, like how you do, right? At office, you do a little bit of work and you suddenly call yourself productive. So I think the actual understanding of productivity should be somewhere in between. But let's try and see what that means, right? Now, let's say we're a think tank. So let's take our own example. We're a think tank, and let's assume that our sole output is producing op-eds, right? Opinion pieces in newspapers. And if that is the case, then let's say one person can write one op-ed in a day. Okay. So just that is the productivity. Well, that's being highly ambitious, but let's assume that to be the case. Okay. And some people do more. So Sarthak can write 1.5 op-eds in a day. Suman can write one, and I can write about a quarter, right? So our varying, I mean, we have different levels of productivity. So that's the first stage, right? What output can each person produce? And in various ways, you can think of this efficiency and so on. Now let's actually bring in, you know, and economic things, because very rarely do you find just one factor of production, right? So what do we actually do? We sit in an office, so that by itself is one input. So you need some kind of office space or land in that sense. We also need have capital. So here the way to think about capital is actually machinery, which is all of us use our laptops, right? So you use your laptop and yep. You to write an op-ed, and then you use the internet, of course, to get the required information, and your own brain. That's the labor part of it. Now you already have a combination between land, labor, and capital, right? And then some kind of entrepreneurship. I mean, this won't happen in kind of isolation. Somebody has asked you to do this, right? Somebody has said, okay, this is what we'll do, so that there's also an entrepreneurship. So now the combination of all of these things put together in order to produce is basically what productivity is, right? So how much of all of these things put together can produce an output. So you have one laptop, one person, one desk at least, and one person who's asking you to do this, right? And now you kind of aggregate that, you get kind of productivity in that firm, and that's the way to think. Now the interesting aspects, I think, would be about change in productivity, right? By itself, I mean, productivity is, you know, I mean, it can be just what is at the moment, but changes in productivity is far more interesting. So let's say you have an old 2000, which you did until very recently, right? You had a laptop from, I don't know, like my grandfather's generation or something, which would take about 2 hours to boot and another, you know, half an hour to open up Microsoft Word.
We'll discuss this offline.
Google Docs or something, and then some kind soul helped us all by pouring coffee over it, and you had to buy a new brand new Mac, right? So now what has happened is that to write an op-ed that 2.5 hours used to spend, and that's not really an exaggeration, folks, the 2.5 hours used to spend in just booting up your laptop is now gone, right? And so therefore you can now go from writing one op-ed to probably 1.2 op-eds in a day, and that is the change in product. So that's basically the idea. I'll go into the macro things later, but let's get Sarthak in for his thoughts on how productive this woman is.
Thanks, Anupam, for pointing out how an external shock in this case increased productivity. But yeah, I mean, different countries, they have different productivity levels. And I just want to give you an idea, right, how productivity levels varies across countries. Right, in India, at this point of time, the output per hour of work is somewhere around $8 to $9. Can anyone guess what is the productivity of, let's say, United States? And United States, by the way, is not the most productive nation. Anupam, Suman, do you want to take a stab here?
US, I would imagine somewhere between $50 to $60 per hour.
It's more than that. It's basically, it's around $75 to $80 per hour. Right? Right. So what it implies is in the United States, the productivity, labor productivity is almost, 10 times that of India. And countries like Ireland, the productivity is somewhere around $125 per hour. Norway, it is $100 per hour. So, I mean, the same individual, right? Let's say in US and the same individual is in India. The output, the individual is creating in United States will be way more than that in India. And if you look at India and its neighbors, right, more or less, we are at the same levels when it comes to productivity. India and Pakistan, by the way, more or less same productivity levels. In 2017, Pakistan's productivity was more than that of India. Sri Lanka is double that of India. China is more than that of India. But at some point of time, India and China were also same. 1980s, more or less, it was same. So productivity levels varies massively. And the productivity levels have also changed over a period of time. In 1950s, what US, the productivity level was around $20 per hour. Around less than 20, but more or less around 20. So imagine, at this point of time, India's output per hour is $8. In 1950s, United States output per hour was $20. India's productivity has gradually increased. In 1980s, every year, there has been an increase of 5% in India's productivity. But despite that, we are way low, right? We are still less than what was US productivity back in the 1950s. Because again, our base was extremely less. So the point is, the kind of ecosystem that you have, right? The kind of technical efficiency that you have, the kind of organization that you have, the kind of infrastructure that you have, it has a bearing. And at this point of time, we are extremely less productive as compared to large parts of the world.
Yeah. So now we're talking about just labor productivity specifically, right? So can we have a definition of what is labor productivity, or is it just a mathematical construct, or is there more to it than just that?
Go ahead, Anupam.
No, okay. So I think let's go back to the trivial example, right? And then kind of aggregate it at the country level. So again, if you look at just the office, it's and our op-ed is this thing, the labor productivity is how much is the labor contributing to that, right? Whereas when you bring in the machinery and the other people in it and the rent and so on, that's what you'd call as total factor productivity. So you have to look at, you know, total factor productivity, which is nothing but a ratio of all the total output to all of the inputs combined. So that will give you an idea of how productive the firm is, or in at a country state, it would be exactly that, right? The total output, which is nothing but GDP, and the total input, which goes into it, right? And then you get this idea of productivity. Now, while that overall productivity is kind of helpful, you also need to know how productive is individual inputs, right? Individual kind of factors of production. So then you isolate those things and say, how productive is labor? That is, how much additional, so if you look at marginal productivity, you'd look at how much additional output is coming out due to an additional, you know, labor or an increase in labor. And that gives you an idea of, you know, what is that labor contributing towards productivity? You know, how much output is that labor contributing? And so you do this at the country level. And as Sarthak said, the way to, you know, generally the idea is how much output is one person working for 1 hour generating, right? What is the value of the output of one person for one person's 1 hour worth, right? And so that's the statistic that he was giving, which is that in India, a person controlling for all other things, okay, so let's not get bogged down. It's controlling for exchange rate, it's controlling for inflation, it's controlling for everything else. Person in India contributes about $8 per hour if they're working, and a person in the US contributes about $75 an hour. And I think the highest, Satak, was about $130 an hour Ireland. And so that's the difference. You know, I mean, there's like almost a 13x, 1,300% difference between Ireland and India, right? And why Ireland, I think you can get into that separately, but that's the idea of labor productivity. And so many people do this for various other things. So you can look at just capital productivity. So how much is capital kind of contributing and so on. And so all of these things have individual kind of merit as to why you would want to look at that separately. But there's also, you'll also have to look at it, you know, in total. So I'll just say one final thing before I move on. Labor, even though we are isolating for, you know, these things, when we say looking at labor productivity, it is still influenced. So labor productivity increases with increase in capital, it increases with other things and so on. I think Sarthak will talk to you about later about what are the different kind of factors that contribute to labor productivity. But I'm just trying to say that even though you're looking at something in isolation, there are, of course, various factors which contribute to it, like the other factors of input as well. So that's the idea.
Cool. So from the Indian context, given that our working age population is increasing and the pressure on job creation is increasing, this labor productivity becomes very important to study and, you know, just to get ourselves out of the rut that we are in, right? So what is it that is unique for India? What is it that is specific to India that is probably holding us back? Is there something that we can point out, or is it just a function of the level of development that we are in?
Yeah, so I think what we should do is look at the actual factors which contribute to productivity and see how they are in India. And I think we can discuss those things. And Sarthak is the best person to talk about. But I'll just add one final context as to why we should look at productivity. And that is, in economics, productivity is equal to wage. Right. So in a well-functioning market, and Indian labor market is not well-functioning, but let's assume that in whatever, to whatever extent it is functioning, your marginal product is equal to your wage. Right. And that's economic theory. Marginal product is equal to wage, which means, and I think this is fairly, you know, easy to understand that, again, let's go back to our op-ed example. If you produce one op-ed in a day and that op-ed earns you something like 10,000 rupees, then, you know, that's the thing. So then you can look at it per day, you're producing output worth 10,000 rupees and you also get that money for you, right, as an input. So, And you can look at it in different ways. If I work in a factory and I'm able to produce 1,000 pins and those 1,000 pins are worth whatever, 100 rupees, then my productivity is 100 rupees, right? And therefore, I will get the money that I am equal to the amount that I'm producing, right? Now, of course, this gets a lot more complicated in the services sector, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But still, wages are connected to productivity.
Yeah, thanks Anupam for bringing out this dynamic, right? How wages and labor productivity, they are linked with one another. Now, what are the factors which has a bearing on labor productivity? So one thing is, what kind of sector plays the most significant part in any economy? Right now, the labor productivity varies as per the sector. For example, in the agriculture sector, the labor productivity will be less. The overall, whatever is the output and the number of people who are employed, especially in India, right? That the number of people employed is too huge and the output is quite limited. So labor productivity in the agricultural sector is less. Labor productivity in manufacturing sector tends to be more. Labor productivity in the services sector tends to be even more. And again, within each of these sectors, there are again subcomponents where again the labor productivity will vary. So labor productivity depends on the sectors of the economy and how much significant are these sectors in the economy. Also, another dimension here, capital deepening or how capital intensive a sector is, that also has a bearing on labor productivity. For example, if there is a sector where there's a lot of capital or the capital per worker is quite high, the productivity is high, the labor productivity is high. So you have variation along those lines as well. So Anupam, you had your hands in. You wanted to add something?
Yeah, just one aspect, since you were talking about labor productivity, especially in the agricultural sector, I want to throw in a couple of statistics, right? So people understand get an idea of how low the labor productivity in agriculture is. So just, I mean, at the top line, which probably everybody gets, is that, you know, you have about, now varying, but between 45 and 50% of the population who are employed in a way in agriculture, but they totally contribute to about 15% of GDP. At best, I mean, you can throw in my plus or minus 2-3% here and there for accuracy, but it won't change the story too much, right? And that tells you that, you know, if 50% of the population is producing 15% of output and you're looking at productivity as a ratio, that ratio is going to be extremely low, right? That ratio is extremely low. So one person in the farm is actually producing far less than they would anywhere else in the economy, right? And so this gives credence to the idea that you have to get people out of agriculture into other aspects, into other kind of areas of, because right now, you know, typically, and this is another way of thinking about it, and I think this is known, right? Four people in India are doing the job what one person can do. And that is in a normal stage. But now if you bring in advanced tractors, machinery, etc., I think that proportion will be a lot more. I think nearly 6 or 7 people in India are doing the job that one person can. And so what that means is that, you know, when I say people, we should get people out of agriculture and not so many people should be in agriculture, people take it very emotionally, right? You know, about all of this. And they think it's an anti-farmer thing, but it's not. In fact, the best thing you can do to farmers, both existing and the people who get out of it, is to get people out of agriculture. And the reason being, once you increase labor productivity, once you get enough people out of agriculture, then the size of land improves. You can actually then invest. Once you have a bigger size of land, then the economies of scale will come and you can invest more in modern machinery, etc. Productivity goes up. And once productivity goes up, then you're obviously, as we said, wages go up. And so that link between labor productivity and wages is important. And once wages go up, all of the other aspects that we were talking about with regard to agriculture, right, about farmer suicide and indebtedness, all of those things will go away, right, if you improve productivity. And you can't improve productivity by having more than 50% of the population working on small pieces of land. So I think that is important to emphasize. And the final bit, just a statistic to, again, to throw, is that, you know, if Indian farmers per person output were similar to the US, then India would need only about 8.8 million farmers, right? As against the 264 million it has now, right? So what that means is, if we increase labor productivity in India, then you would only require about 3.3% of the number of people who are employed in agriculture today. Only 3%, okay? Let that sink in. You require only 3% of the number of people who are employed in agriculture today and keep the level of output at the same level as we have today with, if we improve labor productivity in agriculture. So that should give you an idea of how low it is currently. Back to you, Sadhu.
Yeah, thanks, Anupam. You mentioned one thing, that we need to get more people out of agriculture. And already we know that agriculture productivity is less as compared to, let's say, the productivity in manufacturing and services. And again, those who are in the agricultural sector, right, they also know that the incentives, or at least the incentives for them, are better in the manufacturing services sector, but that transition has not happened. So what I'll do is, I'll come to this bit in a while, right? Why this transition hasn't happened. But before that, I just want to add one more parameter. So labor productivity is also dependent on what is the size of the formal sector as compared to the informal sector, right? If you have a large unorganized sector, so in that case, what happens? Again, labor productivity is less, right? In case of India, that has been the case. Most likely what is happening is, in the unorganized sector, there's not much incentive for the firms to maybe improve the quality of human capital, training, skilling, all those things. Apart from that, in the unorganized sector, the capital intensity is also less as compared to the organized sector. Again, maybe because of the kind of incentives over there. All these things has a bearing. So formal sector,
scale up.
Again, how much they can grow and all those things, limitations might be there. So in the formal sector, you have a higher labor productivity as compared to the informal sector. Manufacturing services have higher productivity as compared to the agricultural sector. Right now, as workers also know where their incentives are better. But that transition has not happened, right? Informal to formal, or from agriculture to services, manufacturing, right?
Yeah, we'll come back to the reasons and what can we do to make this better after a short break. Okay. Okay, welcome back. We are discussing labor productivity and in the specific context of India. So before the break, we were on different factors that affect productivity and what we can do to make that better. Yeah, so Anupam, take it from there.
Right. So I think the question about why the transition between informal to formal has not happened is, I mean, it's a very old one in India. It's not, and the answers are fairly clear. So I'm just going to very quickly kind of summarize the existing knowledge about it. Right? Individuals and workers want to be in the formal sector. I think there's a very clear preference. Nobody prefers to be informal. I mean, maybe at the fringes, but most of them want to be in the informal sector. But there is not enough scope for that to happen. Many of the firms prefer to be informal though. Right now, you have to break this down between organized, unorganized, formal, and informal. Those are two different things. So a firm can be formal, but will not have, can employ people in the kind of informal sector. So what I mean by that is you can have a registered company. So it's not unorganized, it's not informal. You can have a registered company who will employ X number of people, but then let's say about 99 people it might hire on the books who are formal employees, but it might have another 150 people who are contract labor, right? Who are not really formal or informal. And then it could hire some other people who are entirely informal. So all of these kind of combinations could happen. But the idea of why such a large population of people are in the informal sector and such a large number of firms are not formal, I think it's fairly clear, which is to do with the Indian rules and regulations, the ease of doing business, labor laws, and so on, right? But the idea is that the entire gamut of rules and regulations and ease of doing business in India is set up in such a way that incentivizes firms to stay informal. It incentivizes firms to hire people informally and also produce goods and services informally, right? Because as we know, if a firm hires more than like 50 people, then a whole bunch of labor laws will kick in. If it hires more than 100 people, another set of labor laws will kick in. Then compliance costs will go up. Then it says even if you're a factory, then a whole bunch of other rules and regulations that you have to provide for a crash, you have to provide for something else, you have to provide for a spittoon, varying degrees of importance. But all of those rules will kick in. And not every firm wants to abide by those rules because it'll increase their costs, it'll make them less competitive and so on. So the easy way out for a lot of firms is to show that they have about 9 or 19 employees and just below that mark, and then the rest of them will be informal. Now that, of course, they'll end up saving some money in the short run, some costs by not having to provide all of that, but it massively impacts their productivity, right? The firm's productivity in the medium to long run. Yeah. Because as you know, as you correctly said, the difference in productivity between formal and informal is quite huge.
Yeah. And also there is a difference in productivity in manufacturing services and agriculture, right? And at this point of time, agriculture also low productivity and people find it difficult to move out of agriculture. There are so many restrictions on selling your agriculture land. These kind of restrictions vary from states to state. Also, the number of jobs being created in, let's say, manufacturing or services sector is limited. So that also prevents movement from agriculture to these sectors where the productivity could have been more.
Sure. Absolutely. Thanks both of you. I just want to zoom out a little bit at this point, and like everywhere else, we compare India and China. I just want us to get some kind of a comparison between how the two countries stack up actually, and in terms of labor productivity, and where are we going with what we are doing.
So in 1980s, right, at that point of time, India and China, they were almost at the same level when it comes to labor productivity. But in the last 30 years, both the countries, right, their labor productivity has increased. For India, almost 5% annual increase in labor productivity is there. China, it is slightly more. Right? It's 5.5, 5.6. And at this point of time, India's labor productivity is like 3/4 that of China. It's not just China's labor productivity being better than India, it is better than many other countries around us, right? Many of the Southeast Asian countries, many developing countries, China's labor productivity is better than that. Now, let's break it up into parts, right? When it comes to, let's say, the agricultural sector, what has happened? In agricultural sector, China's labor productivity is way more than that of India. It's almost like 3 times that of India. And we started at the same point in 1980s. When it comes to industries, again, massive variation, almost 5 times high labor productivity China has as compared to India. But interesting part is services. When it comes to services, India's labor productivity is much more than that of China. Right? So agriculture and industry, China has massively improved. When it comes to services, India has done fairly well. So whatever growth in labor productivity has happened, in case of India, the major contribution has been the labor productivity in the services sector. But when it comes to China, the major improvement, major growth in labor productivity has come because of its manufacturing sector. So this is how it looks like when you compare India with China. And China is, overall, the labor productivity is more than that of India.
Yeah, it's worth also noting, I mean, while Sarthak has given you a formal kind of comparison, right? Let's take some of the other ideas as to how this plays out in real life. So you look at a medium-sized factory, right? Now, we do a lot of policies to encourage small, medium, and micro enterprises and all of those things. Now, what is a medium enterprise? The definition of that is massively different between India and China, right? A medium enterprise in India is about 99 employees. A medium enterprise in China is about 50,000 employees, right? That makes a big difference. Now, the reason why I'm talking about this is that scale of operation will obviously increase labor productivity. Right. If you're in 100 employees with small factory with, you know, maybe 2 machines, etc., the amount that a laborer is able to produce is vastly different from what you can produce in a really big setup and so on. Now, this is all important from a geopolitical lens as well. If you're talking about, you know, the China plus one strategy, if you're saying firms should move out of China and come to India, etc., I think there's a little bit of wishful thinking there because labor productivity in India cannot match up to China. So we need only in a situation where the geopolitical risk will far outweigh the cost of, you know, this loss in productivity. Only in that situation will firms move. Now, I know everybody would say, oh, what about Foxconn and what about Apple, etc.? Yes, that has happened. That's a tiny fraction, but yeah, that's still an encouraging sign and it has happened. But you will still see, as some reports have come out, that the productivity in some of these factories are far lower. And I think Foxconn is realizing this, right? So failure rate is high. Other aspects to do with labor is difficult to kind of navigate, etc. So the solution still lies in fixing all of these if you want to increase labor productivity.
Yeah, so Anubhav, I wanted to add one thing. So building on what you are saying about the size of the firms, so there is also this correlation. Those economies which have large number of firms which are large in size, right? Large firms. So there you have higher labor productivity. And again, we can link it with one of those initial equations that we're discussing. Labor productivity is dependent on capital deepening, right? How much capital per worker you have. It is dependent on total factor productivity. It is also dependent on labor quality. So this total factor productivity comes in the picture. If you have large firms, right, they can operate at scale, they can operate more efficiently. So it will lead to a scenario where whatever input you have, right, you can convert it into a larger output with minimum utilization of resources. So large firms in the Chinese economy, they have contributed to increasing the labor productivity, right? And in case of India, look at the size of the firms, right? Mostly we have small firms, we have different kinds of policies for which kind of act as a disincentive for firms to become larger. They tend to continue to remain small. And yeah, it impacts the labor productivity.
Exactly. And you can readily see how the size of the firm contributes to labor productivity, right? So if you're a big firm, not only obviously are you producing more, and so therefore that economies of scale will kick in, but crucially, a big firm is able to invest in technology. A big firm will probably invest in worker skilling and development. A big firm will invest in the latest machinery, right? Because they know that they can recoup all of those things. Whereas a small firm might still be working, you know, with actual manual labor or small machinery, etc. So I think, we know this, right? Labor, that total factor productivity is really the not just the ratio of inputs to outputs, but that magic, right? That the magic that happens, which is that, you know, if one person is able to produce one item, and then you bring in technology and suddenly they can produce, you know, 2 items or 3 items or 4 items, right? And that technological investment, the R&D, innovation, etc., that happens in big firms, not in small firms, right? And so therefore, that again is important.
Yeah. And one more factor which can help in labor productivity, increasing labor productivity, is how much trade this economy is doing, or how much part of the GDP is being contributed by the exports. Right now, let's say you are not open to international trade. So if you improve the labor productivity, that implies that each laborer is now producing more. But you need to have a market to sell these goods, right? So unless you are open to the international markets, even if you are improving labor productivity, there will be some other negative consequence, right? Maybe it will lead to increase in unemployment or so. So you also have to increase your market, increase exposure to different other international markets. So those countries where the contribution of exports to GDP is large, they also tend to have higher labor productivity, right? So again, here also, since China will have a large export to GDP ratio, right? There also the growth in labor productivity will be higher, which might not be the case in India.
Now, I was just coming to the counterintuitive point that he just brought out. I don't know if it is counterintuitive, but yeah, that as you increase productivity, unemployment may increase, right? Or you will have that pressure. So how does one balance this out, and how does this play out in the long term is where I was going.
Right. Can I come to that in just a second? Sarthak, so I think there's a very clear kind of correlation between trade openness and productivity. And this has been the case throughout the world, irrespective of which country you look at. Historically, whenever a country has opened up to greater trade, there you will have trade openness. Now, you spoke about exports, and I think that's an important factor. You export more, which means you have a larger market. So therefore, you will have to expand. That is, the firm size will have to expand. You produce more, and all of those things will kick in. But I want to speak about the other aspect, which is often not spoken about, which is imports. I would say that the greater you're open to importing, the greater your productivity will be. And it's fairly obvious. So if I want to produce cars in India, and I don't have the machinery to do so, or let's say I'm working with, like Suman, right, that old laptop, and I'm not able to produce as much. Now, suddenly, if I'm able to import a better machine to produce cars, or if I import a better laptop, then suddenly my productivity will increase. So inputs and imports can play a big role in increasing labor productivity, without a doubt, across the board. So I think that's one more reason why we should have open kind of trade borders and, be open to importing, because that will increase in productivity, which will then increase output, and that can increase exports in return. So there's a very clear kind of causal link between all of those things. Now, onto the dilemma, and I think this is a very interesting dilemma, Sumana, in terms of short-run implications of increasing labor productivity. And I think in some ways, so this is the idea, right? If I can produce, if a firm wants to produce, 10 units of something, and right now it employs 10 people to do that, right? Now, as we said, if you bring in a machine, you could now reduce that or rebalance that ratio. You could probably have 4 people and 1 machine, right? Or 1 person and 2 machines. So that's a kind of choice that you can make. And now that person is super productive, right? So labor productivity increases because that one person is now able to produce 10 units, whereas earlier 10 people used to be required to produce that unit. Now, so in the extremely short run, increasing labor productivity can result in greater unemployment or higher unemployment because fewer people are doing the work of what more people used to do. But I have to emphasize that is an extremely short-term phenomenon because let's go back to that example. A firm producing, 10 units of something with 10 people has now rebalanced it, whereas, where they're producing, 5 people and 1 machine, right? Now, that firm is not going to say, perfect, now we've rebalanced and let's stick to producing 10 units. Why would they do that? The next step they'll do is, why should we produce 10 units? Let's produce 100 units, right? And so now they'll go from employing 5 people to employing 50 people and whatever, 10 machines, right? So that ratio might still be the same, but you have, in fact, increased employment in that because that firm will want to expand next from 100 to 1,000 and so on. So you've gone from, because now it's more profitable. Right? Yeah. The incentive exists. It's more profitable. They want to produce more. So from producing 10 units, they go to producing 1,000 units and 10,000 units. And so therefore, they go from employing, 10 people to now employing 500 people, right? The ratio might be different from labor to capital, but you're still now overall, you're employing more people. So in the long run, increasing labor productivity actually increases employment, right? Because if not, the common thing that people do is imagine there's this thing called lump of labor fallacy, right? That they assume that the total amount of work to be done or the total amount of output to be produced is fixed. And if that output is fixed, yeah, then this rebalancing will result in unemployment. But it's crucial to remember that output is not fixed, right? When computers came in, everybody thought this, you know, productivity is going up, everybody will be unemployed. Absolutely not. That didn't happen.
Thanks, Anupam. That's a great insight to get out of this whole thing. Otherwise, we are always trying to make this false argument or equivalence between increase in productivity and employment as such. Yeah. So finally, I mean, the takeaways that I had is improving skill, getting better technology, improving processes and scale of operations will help improve labor productivity here anywhere, and specifically so for India. Right? So do you, I mean, anybody, any closing comments, and then we can probably, you know.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I mean, in India also different states will have different productivity, right? So I was just wondering, do we have any, I mean, I don't think, at least I have not come across these kind of research. And if the different states have different levels of productivity, right, it will have impact on internal migration, or has the internal migration actually caught up with the productivity levels, or there are different kinds of barriers to migration and this link has not worked as expected? So maybe this is something that we can take up.
Yeah. So, okay, you said later on, but I want to say
if
right
you want
now,
to, yeah, go ahead.
There will be barriers to migration for sure, but relatively speaking, wherever it is possible, I think people will move to places with higher productivity, right? So you can have, I mean, even at the lowest level, if a person can produce, I don't know, 10 vadas in a small shop in, you know, one part of India, whereas you find that in another part, maybe in another state, maybe another city, maybe another area, you can produce more because of better, let's say you have better footpath, which means more people can come to your store. People do that, right? And because, again, remember, greater productivity would mean greater wages. So that is your incentive why labor will move to areas with higher productivity. And that's the internal, I mean, within India, there will be discrepancies and therefore migration will happen. And if you look historically, where have been the hotspots of migration, right? It's been Bangalore, Mumbai and so on. These are also the places with higher productivity. So you can kind of draw that equivalence.
Yeah, I was wondering, what is the scale of this difference, right? Productivity, let's say in Bangalore, and let's say productivity in some interior place or in some other state, capital of another state. So that can give us some good insights maybe.
We don't have good data on that, but I think the way to look at that is, again, look at wages. Look at the wage difference for, let's say, even for a person with who does any kind of job, right? Look at the wage difference and that'll give you an idea. So probably at extremely low levels of employment, you might not see too huge a difference because productivity is low across. But as you keep going up, I think these differences will come about. So that's an interesting aspect. And the final thing, probably, Suman, I think what we have to end on is this idea of, you know, again, why are we looking at productivity, right? And India has a massive unemployment problem. We know that the number of people in the labor force itself is extremely low. So it might seem almost antithetical, or it might seem out of place to look at productivity as your primary thing. But I want to, again, just emphasize that by increasing productivity, you will in fact create greater employment in the long run. You increase productivity, it means you'll increase output. If you increase output, you will have greater demand for labor, and that will increase thing. And then it'll also not just any kind of labor, but there will be greater demand for skilled labor. And so there'll be more people who'll try to get skilled, so that which will increase the productivity and which will increase the wages, right? So it has all kinds of really important implications for the Indian economy. And therefore, we should be talking about productivity, and we should be talking a lot more about productivity.
Yeah, sure. Thanks both of you. On that note, we will end this, and we hope everybody has a productive day. And we'll show this at this point. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, Anupam.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in. Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.